HTXT AfriCast is sponsored by Neotel, South Africa's first converged communications network operator. Neotel, inspiring possibilities. Welcome to another episode of the HTXT AfriCast. I'm Brett Haggard. Thanks for joining us. It's Tuesday, the 12th of August, 2014. Today in the studio, we have our news guy, Charlie Fripp. How's it, Charlie?
Fine, thank you very much.
Good, good. And sitting next to him, our mobile and hardware guy, Dave Beanway. How's it, Dave?
What's up?
Yeah, you know, the usual. Actually, not the usual. Quite an exciting morning we've had so far at HTXT Africa. And quite an exciting morning you've been having, actually, Dave, because you've been writing up all of the detail on Intel's new chip, the Broadwell processors, correct?
Yep, indeed.
And this one is a tick, not a tock, which essentially means it is a micro-architecture or a die shrink, not a completely new architecture design.
Yes, correct.
Okay, which would be a talk. So let's quickly explain that for most people, because when you talk about Intel and their chips, you talk about ticks and tocks. And let me quickly explain what that is. A tick is when they take an existing architecture, so a design of a chip, and they shrink it a size smaller. So this is the nanometers we normally talk about. The nanometers get smaller and smaller and smaller, which means that the transistors and the channels and everything else get closer and closer together. Normally, there's about 5 or 6% of the chip that is slightly changed in terms of architecture, but not much more than that, and that's just really to accommodate the fact that it has shrunk. And the benefit of shrinking the chip is, or at least the die on which the chip is built and manufactured, is that the transistors are that much closer together, leading to overall performance increases and reductions in power, right? And then 12 months later, what they do is they then do a completely new architecture for the chip, and that is referred to as a TOC. And what happens is, so every 2 years you have a completely new architecture going into their chips, and every 2 years you have a completely new shrink going on in terms of the designs. And what happens is they place these 12 months apart. So this year, 2014, we've got a tick, which is a shrink of the architecture, and this will be a shrink of the Haswell architecture,
yep,
correct?
Exactly.
Okay, which is why it shares a name in part. And you find that Intel does tend to kind of make things sound more or less the same when they do this shrink, all right?
Yeah. So Haswell Broadwell.
Haswell Broadwell, indeed. The next one is going to be called Skylake, and you can see how different Skylake is from Broadwell and Haswell. So Skylake will be the next micro-architecture refinement. Let's not jump too deeply into that. Like I say, there are a couple of little refinements, but let's let Dave take us through what the benefits are going to be. I know that there's some massive power benefits, and it runs much cooler, right?
Yeah. So the cool thing is that they're aiming for even more power reductions. And I mean, Haswell was noted for two things. It was more graphics performance.
Yep.
And then a drastic reduction in power. That's why Haswell notebooks now have eight hour to 12 hour battery life. I mean, if you look at a 13 inch MacBook Air, it's got stated 13 hour battery life,
which is insane,
which is ridiculous. I mean, you don't actually need that. There's not a lot of times in your life that you'll be without a charger for 13 hours, but in case you are, there are laptops that can
do
that.
I think that those are also, to a certain extent, ideal situations.
Yeah.
I would say if you're using it in an average context for the space of a day, you'll probably get about 7 to 8 hours comfortably out of a machine like that. To get to the 10 to 12 hours, you're having to switch Bluetooth and Wi-Fi off and dim the display and do all that kind of stuff. But technically, it is possible. You're right.
It's
it is absolutely possible.
Yeah.
Yes.
And anyway, so with Broadwell, the first chips that they've released are the Core M chips. Now, these are the lowest power in terms of actual processing power and in terms of power draw in the whole lineup.
These are going to be for tablets, right?
So, yeah. So, for tablets or things like Chromebooks, where it's not a lot of power and it's very similar to that. So, these replace the Y series, which were right at the bottom. So, they're no longer going to be i3, i5, i7. It's going to be Core M in the branding so that they can differentiate these chips.
All right. Interesting little tweak.
So,
okay.
It'll help people, you know, I mean, you see Core i3, but it's a Y series chip. You're going to get really low performance out of that. And they're trying to distance the two categories from
each other. So they've done away with the Core i3, i5, i7. You're going to pretty much have Core M. And what are the others going to be?
And then i3, i5, i7 will be above that. But those will be like your ULV chips, the ultra low voltage, which you find in notebooks and things like that that need a lot of battery life. Yes. And then the desktop chips above that.
So two distinct SKUs in the cores now.
Yeah, so they've separated it out. And the Core M stuff is cool because if you look at the Y series chips that we had last year, they've literally got a between 60% to 100% more battery life.
That's mad.
Which is, I mean, they're now talking about they had a 10-inch tablet that could do 10 hours of battery.
20 hours?
So No. So the new one is, the Broadwell one that they had on show. So a 10-inch tablet can do 10 hours of battery life.
Currently.
No. So with the Broadwell. Broadwell chips, right. But it was 7.2 millimeters thick. So
that's
there's
crazy.
There's next to nothing inside of there. I mean,
and probably a really small battery in there also.
Exactly.
Right?
So tiny battery, same performance, long battery life. Or if you're a manufacturer, you could go, you know, same size chassis for your tablet as the previous generation and get double the battery life or double the performance. It just really opens up the amount of things that these guys can do next year with these tablets. And the cool thing is, I mean, that the reference design one that they had out there, that board can do triple display output up to 4K. So these little tiny chips can power 3-4K displays out of them. It's just awesome.
That's crazy. That's absolutely mad. So there's been quite a bit of graphics performance. So, you know, so the bottom line is huge reduction in thickness. All right. I'm just looking at the slide here that kind of says 26 millimeters to 7.2 millimeters.
Yeah. That's their reference design in 2010 compared to the new
one in
2014.
Exactly. This is just 4 years. Okay. Yeah. 4 times reduction in total thermal. All right, TDP, which is your thermal envelope, pretty much, the amount of heat generated by the box.
Yeah.
Very important, this, because the lower the thermals go, the less need there is for a fan. Fans do two things. They make a machine noisy, A, and B, what they do is they drain battery life.
And they make it thicker. I mean, the 7.2 mil doesn't have a fan. It is that cool.
That's insane. 7 times improvement in graphics. That's astounding. That's really, really
that's
good.
That's from Haswell. That's basically where the big jump came in, was in Haswell.
Yeah, okay. And then 2 times in improvement in the IA core. So this is basic number crunching ability.
Yeah.
This is basic operations. You're going to see these kinds of benefits in things like Word and Excel and PowerPoint. This is
and
basic operations.
Watching a movie.
Yeah,
because it'll
that browsing the net, rendering of web pages, all of that kind of stuff. It's going to make a huge difference there. And like they say, half the battery size, double the life. That is impressive.
Which
so
they've 4 times improvement overall.
Yes, exactly.
In the actual power.
So with the same size battery as what you had in 2010, you'd be getting 4 times the battery life. Okay, so what they've been able to do is half the size of the battery and double the life, which essentially means that very thin machines with much smaller batteries giving you much longer battery life.
Yeah.
Very, very cool stuff.
So the Core M stuff is coming later this year. They've said it will be available on sale in the States before holiday season, well enough before that people can buy them. And then all of the notebook parts and things like that, they've had problems with yield, so they're not getting as many chips as they wanted to. So they'll make the notebook chips and then notebook desktop and the server chips will be much later in the year next year. But January, February, we should start seeing notebooks with these. And that's going to be really impressive. That's where the big stuff comes.
Having said that, also expect for there to be quite a bit of news around the notebook and desktop parts coming out of Intel Developer Forum in September, which I'll be attending.
Yeah.
That's where we're going to be. The same way we've just found about Intel Core M now, we're going to be finding out in the September timeframe about the new Core i3, i5, and i7s, both in terms of the ULVs for notebooks and tablets and the desktop parts. But very, very cool stuff. I just love the way this Moore's Law thing just keeps on going. It's ridiculous.
It's literally Intel finds a way every year to double the amount of transistors on a chip. They find a way. And everyone else is still battling around 25 nanometer, which is where Haswell was, and they're already moving to 14. I mean, they're literally a generation ahead of everyone, just standard.
It's going to get unbelievably crazy in the next couple of years.
Ever since they got their asses handed to them by AMD back in the day, in the early 2000s.
They vowed it would never happen again, and look what's happened.
Yeah, desktop and notebook-wise, it hasn't. I mean, obviously ARM, you know, on processing power alone, they can't beat Intel. But battery life-wise, that's where they're...
And price. Price
and price.
Very, very cheap.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we jump into the next topic, I want to quickly just touch on our sponsor for a sec, Neotel. We thank them so much for their support of the HTXT AfriCast. And to tell you a little bit more about them, Neotel is South Africa's first converged communications network operator. It provides a wide range of value-added voice, internet, and data services for enterprise, wholesale, and retail customers in Southern Africa. Powered by Neotel's high-performance fiber optic backbone, its next-generation network challenges the status quo, making communication simpler and inspiring you to the next level. For more information, call 0860-NEOTEL, that's 636-835, or visit www.neotel.co.za. Neotel, inspiring possibilities. So here's an interesting one, something we chatted about a while back on the ZA Tech Show, and it's something I wanted to bring up again today because it's literally just become available, and that's EA Access, which is essentially EA subscription-based service available for Xbox One, now out of beta, all right, confirmed for $5 a month or $29.99 a year. And the whole idea is that you're going to be getting a whole host of EA titles, probably not the newest stuff initially, but mainstream stuff, stuff that's very, very popular. And providing you're paying the $5 a month or the $29.99 a year, $30 a year, you'll have access to these titles, correct? It's pretty much like Spotify, but for gaming.
Yes. Okay. It's really cool. I think it's a great deal. And now everybody can get there, well, provided you have an Xbox One.
Sure.
You can get your hands on Madden 25, FIFA 14, Peggle 2, and there's a fourth one.
Which Battlefield 4.
There we go. Just shows
personally, I think it's worth it just for Peggle 2, man. Peggle 2 is extreme gaming, dude.
It is fun.
Have no idea.
Well, I have a lot of mates who literally play one game a year. They play FIFA, and that's
okay.
It.
I thought you were going to say Peggle.
I have a friend who actually put a picture on his Facebook profile. He goes, the annual disc change. And you see like FIFA 12, FIFA 13.
That's fantastic.
And I'm pretty sure he gets more enjoyment out of his console than I do because he really, really loves that game and he invites friends over and that's all they play and they absolutely adore it. And from a value proposition, I mean, a game...
It's going to win for him. He's going to probably pay $350
a year
for a copy of FIFA 14 anyway. Now he's going to Madden for free, Battlefield...
$800
for
like PS4 games are like $800. Xbox games are going to be like $800 as well.
Jeez,
so
man.
For $350, he gets exactly what he wants.
$320.95 at today's exchange rate.
I mean, there we go. So
there you go.
Let's call
FIFA
it 14,
NFL 25, Battlefield 4, and Peggle 2. The other thing is, they're going to rotate older titles out. Apparently, again, that's not confirmed, but that's the rumor on the street. Is that the older titles will be retired and newer ones will be put in?
Yeah, but they also said that the games that are in the vault.
Stay in the vault.
They're not going anywhere. They will be there forever.
So they'll add, but they're not going to take anyone's out.
Exactly.
What a win. Okay.
I reckon they'll take them out when they, you know, discontinue server support. So when Battlefield 4 servers, multiplayer servers go offline, they'll quiche it from the offering.
Yeah, I think
then.
When they bring out like Battlefield
17.
32.
Yeah.
Then they'll retire that one. But no, it's a great deal. I mean, like I said, those games will be there forever, and it's really cheap.
Yeah.
And you get free games.
It's like PlayStation
and
Plus, really.
And what's pretty rad is it's like a month to go. September comes and Xbox One or X, what do you call it?
X-Bone
is the new. Okay, there we go. X-Bone will be in a month's time. So exciting. It's going to cost a fortune, though. That's the only thing.
Well, it's like 6.3.
Yeah, 6.2 and $8,000.
That's with the Kinect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
okay. But if you've already got like.
No, not old Kinect.
You can't use
New Kinect. New Kinect, okay. Amazing in terms of compared to old Kinect.
So I'm in for $8,000, Dave. That's scary.
Well, okay. You know, FNB is going to offer it and you just pummel it on there again.
Yeah, indeed. Good thing I killed my iPad deal there recently. Anyway, let's move along and talk about Google's new undersea cable. It's big. It's really, really big. It's not going to actually hit South Africa, sadly, or Africa for that matter, but it's going to run from the west coast of the U.S. So we're talking L.A., San Francisco, San Antonio.
No, try again.
Well, I know Seattle's right up at the top, but I don't know which one's in between.
Yes, Seattle's the one.
Seattle and Portland.
Portland. There we go. Portland. Okay, so it's four locations in the west coast of the States, all right, and it's going to land in Japan at two locations, Chikura and Shima.
Yes.
It's funded by Google, which I find really, really interesting. What I find far more interesting, though, is the five other companies that have gotten stuck into this cable and are funding it from the eastern side. I mean, we've got China Mobile International, China Telecom. Help me out with some of the others.
Global Assist.
Yep.
KDDI and Singtel.
Okay. So, again, very big like telco guys, but not necessarily guys that are... have the majority of the operations in Japan. So clearly this is seen as a way to get really, really fast connectivity into the East, and Japan is just the most logical place for it to land, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look at it, East and West are pretty much where the hubs of the internet are, so sure. It would just make sense to kind of connect these two together.
And rest assured, it's not going to come from San Francisco or LA or Seattle or Portland all the way around South America, around Africa, etc., etc. You got to kind of get that whole thing about the fact that the world is round. So what happens is actually a relatively short hop from the west coast of the States to Japan.
Yeah. I think the cool thing is you look at Microsoft and Google and all of them, and Apple for that matter.
Yes, it's not coincidental that it's near Silicon Valley. It's near the Microsoft campus. Come on.
It's near pretty much all of those guys. And their huge push at the moment is into China. I mean, if you look, China Mobile is the big one. That's where they're all aiming at. I mean, that's where Apple keeps, you know, every year when they do their, you know, this is how many iPhones we sold, they always mention, this is how many we sold in China, because Absolutely. That's a big thing for them.
I was going to say, if you ever want a testimony for the fact that the internet companies and the who's who companies in the States in terms of the tech sector, where they're aiming next, it's the East.
Yeah. There's just so much money. I mean, they're doing everything there. I mean, China's one of those places where they're just not happy to remain stagnant. So.
Sure.
They just want more connectivity, and this is not a bad way to get that.
60 terabits in capacity in total. No word at this moment in time whether that will be upgradable or whether that's the ultimate capacity, but I know that they're going to light 60 terabits to start with six fiber pairs. Very, very exciting, considering the fact that that dwarfs pretty much anything we've got going into Africa right now. I know that there's a cable that's due to hit... the continent next year, which is called SACS, and that's going to be 40 terabits in capacity. I think that's the biggest one we've got to date, right, guys?
Yeah, that'll be the biggest by far.
All right, cool. But you've got WAX and Easy and a couple of the others that are measured in gigabits, not in terabits. Unbelievably scary stuff. So,
indeed. Yeah. Look, if you look at the actual cables coming in, Easy is, I think, the closest. It's at 4.7 at the moment with plans to go to 10. And that should be up and running by the end of this year.
And that's gigabits,
not
terabits.
That's terabits.
Is that terabits?
Yeah, okay, but that's good. Up to 10. And then SACS is 40 terabits, and that's only halfway through next year.
Yeah, indeed. That's Q2 2015.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, here down in South Africa, we'll be benefiting from it. But of course, the whole of Africa is going to benefit from all of those cables. There's also a number of cables that are running kind of internal. They aren't submarine cables, but they're joining countries up. Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is you've got one cable project that is going to absolutely blow pretty much all of the capacity that Africa's got and will have lit next year out of the water in one shot. And that'll be to bolster existing capacity. There's been a bit of a back and forth around whether it's going to benefit the rest of the world. The idea is that it will, though, because it'll alleviate a lot of traffic flow that's happening on other cables at the moment, thereby freeing it up for the rest of the world to enjoy some of the fiber that runs
it's kind
into
of like
the west coast of the States.
A knock-on effect. People need to remember that. It's like a knock-on. You know, if you relieve traffic on one road, it opens up, you know, other roads, there will be less congested.
Sure.
And the same is with broadband as well.
Cool. Speaking of broadband, something that broke yesterday, which I was just surprised. I don't even know whether this is big news, but I'm going to mention it anyway. MTN now has LTE available to its prepaid customers. Only what? Like April, May, June, July. It's
Like 5 or so months.
16 months after, yeah, 16 months, after LTE became available on Vodacom. I would love to know what took MTN this long to allow LTE to its prepaid customers. Vodacom did it pretty much like a month to 2 months after launching LTE. You know, so I think it's that's quite surprising. They've been massively quiet on exactly what the reasons are. But the nice thing is, if you have an MTN prepaid number at the moment, you can go get a 128K SIM if you don't have one yet. It's automatically provisioned for LTE. You don't have to have it specially provisioned for LTE. And providing you have a piece of LTE kit, like a phone or a dongle or a MiFi that is LTE capable, you automatically start using the LTE network. So yeah,
for a buck 50, cool. And indeed, a bit of time.
Yeah, well, it'll cost you a buck 50 if you don't have any of those things to go and like swap your SIM cards out. And I think it's quite cool that they've got this three-pack now. You don't just have a full-size SIM and a micro SIM, but it also snaps down to a nano SIM, so you can use it inside an iDevice.
Or an HTC One.
Oh, there we go. Does that use a nano SIM? That's quite interesting.
Or a Lumia 1520, which are the three that I know of at the moment.
Oh, okay. Didn't know that. I thought it was iPhones alone. It's cool to see that there are a couple of other manufacturers in the
mix. Space is at a premium.
Using a ludicrously small SIM card for no apparent reason whatsoever. But hey.
Space.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah, because we need smaller SIM doors. I don't know. Anyway.
So that we can put a ridiculously small battery in anyway.
What I want to round out with is a competition I spoke about yesterday, but I'm going to punt it again because I think it is fantastic. There's a competition running on our site at the moment where you can win free tickets to the Lean Startup Weekend. I highly recommend it. If you are interested in starting your own business, if you are in the throes of starting your own startup, Lean Startup practices are unbelievably critical to getting that right. And if you've got some time between the 31st of October and the 2nd of November, you should enter this competition and possibly get tickets to it. It's going to be a really, really useful thing if that's something you want to do. Anyway, that's it for today's episode. Charlie, Dave, gentlemen, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
And yes, we will catch you all tomorrow. If this is your first time listening to the show, go over to iTunes, do a search for HTXT AfriCast and subscribe right there. Alternatively, you can go to www.htxt.co.za/podcast. If you take that address, you bang it into your podcatcher, it'll automatically start syncing you up. And of course, please let us know what you think. Send us some suggestions, ideas, comments, criticisms, etc. podcast@htxt.co.za. Catch you tomorrow. Cheers. The HTXT AfriCast is sponsored by Neotel, South Africa's first converged communications network operator. Neotel, inspiring possibilities.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.